Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is that magical time of your week, and by that I mean actually a week past this recording. It is Not Another Magic Podcast. I am, as always, the man, the myth, the god, Jack LaCroix. Joining me tonight is, my, as always, the Robin to my Batman, the Nightwing to my Red Hood, Jeff Good.
I thought we were getting rebranded for Dragon Season, man. This is Not Another Dragon Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Where we talk all about dragons, nothing but dragons, wall-to-wall dragons.
This is Not Another Dragon Podcast, all about dragons. And because we were requested by some of the folks at Direct Damage Cast, we have also partnered with Bad Dragon. So we are going to be giving away a large flared dragon cock at the end of this episode in the color of your choice, 100% PVC vinyl, just for you ladies or guys. We don't discriminate here. But folks, tonight...
Yeah, Heavy Metal might have a butt plug.
Oh, God almighty.
We've got the dragon.
Yeah. Well, I had to keep the horse one for research. But anyways, so guys, tonight is an exceptionally special evening. You know, I've been called a lot of shit in this community. Like, I literally have been called a lot of shit before. But one of the titles that always seemed to stick for the longest was actually the most hated man in Magic. And you know what? At one point, I actually feel like I earned that title. And every now and then, I stick my dick out there, and I still manage to fuck things up and still get called the most hated man in Magic. But there, our guest joining us tonight is a man who probably held this title far longer than I have, and has held it much, 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 much before I ever dared to attempt to enter the horrendous shithole of MTG Twitter. Joining us tonight is the Patreon of MTG Bro Deals, the man who came up with the initial idea that brought forth the audio excellence and the best writing and creative content in MTG production since 2012.
The man who registered a domain name.
The man who actually ponies up the bucks once a year to make sure that the lights are still fucking on. Dr. Jeebus.
I need a new agent. I was informed I was coming on a Magic podcast, not the, giant dildo giveaway podcast.
Well, I mean, that was a recent thing that just happened, so I'm not really surprised that Sid didn't get back to you about that. But Jeeves, welcome.
Yeah, like
aboard,
I would
man.
Never trust
is...
him to be my agent. Oh my god.
Well, wait. Why wouldn't you trust Sid to be your agent?
Ah, that would be a terrible, terrible idea. Like if anything, if anything, he's like the idea person and I'm the execution person. Like I'm the he can come up with, like, random shit that I would never think of, but, yeah, he is not so good on things and planning.
But, Jeebs, again, I'm very honored to have you on tonight, because you were actually one of the first people in the community that really gave me a chance. Like, I got my start on Monday Night Magic with Tom Gustafson, but when it came to MTG content production, I went to Mana Deprived for a while. And, you know, that kind of worked out. I'll always respect KYT for giving me a chance. But then I was kind of looking for a website that was a little bit different and that was a little bit off the wall. And you were one of the first guys that actually offered me a position. And, you know, here I am 2 years later, and I've delegated all the work to Trevor and Renee. So life is great. I'm following in your example perfectly.
That's right. I delegated the bulk of the work to you, and you have since delegated that away. And yeah, it's
yeah. I mean, I think I'm learning to be a tree leader. Yeah, I'm learning to be a tree leader at this point. So, I Senpei, I just want you to know I'm ascending to master now. But with that said, you know, Jeebs, outside of the occasional article and the Twitter rants and the podcasting and stuff you've done in your past, there might be some listeners out there that actually don't know much about the CEO of MTG Bro Deals. So if you don't mind just taking a minute and kind of introducing yourself, talking about, what got you to this point of podcasting with us, maybe a little bit of Bro Deals history if you feel like sharing that, or just any kind of random stories about the legend and the mythology of Dr. Jeebus.
So I find it hard to believe anyone listening to this podcast wouldn't know who I am. Not because I'm like the biggest deal in the world, I just feel like everyone who knows you probably knows me as well.
Oh, fuck yeah. I mean, like, we're the yin and yang of being horrible people on Twitter.
Well, yin and yang are supposed to be opposites. We're kind of equally terrible.
Yeah, you're more like the peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
well, I guess it's kind of opposite in that you're overtly sexual, whereas I just make a lot of vague references to things that I may or may not have done.
Well, yeah, but see, like, that's where I'm overcompensating, and you don't have to, right?
No, I don't.
But all the same, let's get off your dick, metaphorically and literally, for a moment. And tell us a little bit about, like, kind of what brought you into the community, kind of what you do, what made you interested in Magic and that kind of thing. Because you've wrote a lot about this in your articles. But let's just get a quick recap about the life of Jeebus, R.I.P., for just a brief moment, if you don't mind.
Well, me getting into Magic and me getting into the community are very different things. Like, let's start with
what got you into Magic. Yeah. Let's start with the easiest one to explain.
One of my friends had some cards and said, "Want to try this game?" And I said, "Okay."
That sounds like every fucking origin story I think everybody on this cast has given us.
that's how it started. Like, it's, you know, I had played Spellfire super disappointingly, because, like, my parents knew that I played Dungeons and Dragons. And if you read, like, my last article, sorry, or two articles ago, sorry, because you've already heard the story. Yeah, so, like, my parents knew I played Dungeons & Dragons, so they got me Spellfire cards, because it was, like, the official TSR Dungeons & Dragons game designed in a weekend to try and compete with Magic. very clearly designed in a weekend for any of the other sorry souls who have played the game. It was terrible. And I kept trying to get my friends to play it, because I had these cards and I wanted to do something with them. And then one of my friends was like, "Well, I have these Magic cards, do you want to try that?" And I was like, "Sure." And I was like, "Wow, this game is so much better. Like, fuck Spellfire." But yeah, I mean, like, Magic cards instead of Spellfire, which there's, like, no reason to think that I ever would have got them if it wasn't, you know, the official D&D product, but, like, I would have had much better cards. I'm trying to remember exactly when it was. I think it was around the time of Legends was when Spellfire came out, whereas, like, I didn't start playing until the Dark and Revised. So, I had Revised for the Dual Lands, but other than that, I started in the Dark, which was, like, the exact cutoff of when they stopped printing all the expensive cards. It's all, like, Legends, Antiquities, Arabian Nights, Alpha, Beta, Unlimited. So, I mean, granted, I've gone back and got all of that stuff anyway, but it would have been a lot nicer to open it, not know what it was, and trade it away for an Island Fish Jeskonias. That guy was 6'8", dude. 6'8", on a blue creature.
That's fucking sick back then. It couldn't hide any of the removal. Any of it.
No, even back then it was so terrible. There's no excuse for that kind of thing.
So, okay, pretty standard origin story, but getting into the community, as you mentioned, is something a little radically different, because I think you decided to approach what has grown to be a very large, multinational, pretty enormous community, in a perhaps different way than most people. So what exactly got you into being in the public eye where you are now?
So, all right, I'm going to try and speed through, like, the fast version of this, because it actually goes through the whole origin of Dr. Jeebus and the origin of my brother's website. So I started as Dr. Jeebus on his website. The name itself is, like, it's not a long story, but it's four small stories put together that we don't need to go through. And I wrote a couple articles for the site, and then decided I was going to do just a blog, because my brother Sidlexia, for anyone who doesn't know, owner of Sidlexia.com, which is a, like, 80s and 90s retro gaming and pop culture website.
I'm honestly surprised he hasn't been killed by any of the cereal at this point.
He hasn't eaten any in a while, although I know he was looking at, like, a $200 box of cereal pretty recently that he wanted to try and pick up to eat.
Oh, God. So, like, is there, like, an emergency number on his phone that he can just speed dial for, like, you know, emergency services or you in case food poisoning occurs?
Well, I mean, every phone you can just dial 911 on.
Oh, fuck! Fuck you! I didn't think of it.
They don't have that in Backlash, North Carolina. Don't worry.
No, Jeebus isn't from North Carolina. Neither is Sid.
That's why Jack doesn't know about it.
I'm double.
I guess they don't
emergency
have
services. North Carolina.
So I wrote a few articles for his website, but like, I'm not as stuck in the past as he is. So I wanted the freedom to write about whatever I wanted. So I started a blog on his website, which it did include some other stuff. Actually, like 2 days ago on Twitter, one of my Magic followers was looking for screenshots from the NES game Paperboy, and they randomly tweeted at me like, "Holy shit, I found this like old article you wrote on the game Paperboy, and it's like the funniest thing I've ever read." And that is actually, that's one of the ones I really, really liked.
I've actually read a lot of your old shit. It was about how Paperboy was like Marxism or something like that?
Paperboy was liberal propaganda. And of course, the traffic's gone way down, unfortunately, as a result of, there not being new content. Like, when my brother and I were both posting things regularly, SidLexia.com actually generated more traffic than Star City. When I wrote stuff, a lot of people read it. And as soon as I wrote that, there was, like, so much backlash. And not even, like, about, you know, because it was clearly a joke. But there were so many people who couldn't just let it be a joke. They got me all these, like, old pictures of elections from the 80s. And I guess, like, way back then, it wasn't standardized that, like, blue was Democrats and red was Republicans. But, like, stations did whatever they wanted, and most of them actually had it in the opposite direction. So, because that was, you know, that was, like, the big premise, was, like, the blue houses were the one you delivered to, and the red houses were all evil and had tombstones on their lawns. Because Republicans just bury their dead in their front yards. And, like, that was, like, all the mail I got after writing that. Like, it's a fucking joke. Let it go. Like, I don't believe any of this.
The internet can be really bad at taking a joke.
But, yeah, so yes, I started the blog on the site so that I could write about anything I wanted instead of just writing about, you know, video games and old TV shows, even though I still wanted to do some of that. And when the blog started, I decided, I think this was actually near the beginning of the Colbert Report, and I decided I wanted to do, like, a Stephen Colbert-esque character, except I managed to go, like, way, way more intense than he did. And the longer it went on, like, just the more intense the whole character became, like, just spouting crazy shit. Like it's clearly a joke, but, like, that article about Paperboy being liberal propaganda, I wrote as though it was, like, dead serious and I was angry about it. But
made it so fucking great. Like, that's what made your shit on the website so entertaining, was you did go so over the top and intense with it that seeing the outrage from people who genuinely couldn't catch the joke is, like, that's what pushed me into reading a lot of your old shit.
Yeah, and, I mean, a lot of it wasn't, I don't, you know, I hate to say this, like, some of it I'm really proud of, some of it was just very poorly thought out or, like, phoned in, because I was updating 3 times a week, which, it's kind of a lot, right? Like, even though most of them were pretty short, like, that's a lot of ideas I need to have. And it was awful, because that was when I was living with my ex, and, like, I would actually have to, like, bring paper with me anytime we went anywhere, so if anything happened that pissed me off, like, I could write about it. Like, I could write it down so I wouldn't forget the idea. Because I think, like, half the things on the site started as just, like, I was, you know, my, now ex at the time, but my girlfriend and I were out on dates, and, like, this random thing happened, and I just have to talk about it. Like, one of my first ones, actually, before I adopted the whole character, there was a lot of Simpsons quotes as well involved. And
I think, Jeebus, I think you described what people did before Twitter. Like, you couldn't just, like, get on your phone and tweet angrily about something that happened. You had to, like, pull out a notepad, write it down, and then write it about it later and put it on the internet.
But I think most people didn't give a shit enough to do that. Like, if the website, you know, if the website didn't already have a fan base before I added the blog onto it to help, you know, grow the fan base, I don't think I would have bothered with any of this. But yeah, like, I remember one of the first things, and again, it wasn't written in, like, the same tone, because it was before I had adopted the character, like, we had gone out to the movies, and so I went to use the bathroom quickly before, you know, before we went and sat down. And I went to wash my hands, and all of a sudden I noticed that at least half of the people that use the bathroom are just walking out without washing their hands. And then of the people who came to the mirror, half of them were just checking their hair, not actually washing their hands. And then of those people, half of them were wearing hats. And, like, just still going up to the mirror to check their hair with a hat on. Like, I don't know if they were checking their hat, make sure it was either straight and or tilted enough. But, like...
I mean, the hat game's gotta be on point, bro.
I guess so, but this was... Well, it wasn't that nice of all that had the movie theater, but... Yeah, it was just so bizarre, and, like, I mean, it's a pretty short story, but it's actually a, you know, I'm just kind of going through the actual points of the, you know, what happened here. Like, the article itself is funnier, but, like, yeah, it, like, just random shit would happen, and I just had to write it down, and I totally forget what my point was.
Well, see, like, I think that actually, that's why I started reading a lot of your stuff like that when I first started getting to know you. Was because when I was younger, one of my favorite things to do, both as a teenager and when I was a kid, is I would sit on a bench in the mall and I would just watch people. Because people will do some absolutely absurd shit when they think that nobody's actually sitting there noticing them. You know what I mean? Yes. And it's just all this crazy stuff that people integrate into themselves, and then it kind of billows out into the rest of society, and there's tons of absurdity going on. And so, like, I think that might have been the starting point for some of the backlash you got, too, because people really don't like getting called out on their absurd shit, ever, 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 ever. And especially if it's something minuscule, like, you know, what the fuck do you mean, Jeebus? I went up with my hat. I had to make sure my hat was absolutely crooked, stylistically, sir, like the times are now.
It's cool, but, like, and your hands are still covered with pee playing with your hat now. I mean, hopefully they are. It's like, you know, technically I don't always wash my hands because I have this other system I use where I just don't pee on myself. But I do remember the point now. We were getting to how I became part of the community. And so that was the first part of it.
By not peeing on yourself.
Yes.
By not pissing all over yourself.
You know what? You can pee on yourself in front of a computer. The community is not going to know. They have, unless you're, like, live streaming, you know, peeing on yourself, like, 24-hour Magic Online slash, you know, 24-hour Magic Online slash peeing on myself stream.
I don't think they allow that on Twitch anymore. You got to go to a fetish site for that.
As long as you don't pull it out, as long, like, as you're just, like, being on your... If all they see is your pants getting wet, I think that's okay. It's not, like, you don't, like, pull it out and, like, you know, aim it towards your face or something. That's...
You just stand up in front of the camera and your pants get wet.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you could just Kevy and post pictures of your dick randomly once a month. You know, that happens too.
But, Jeff, don't forget, I've never done a 24-hour stream, so I'm not 100% sure on the logistics of, you know, how the peeing takes place during that. But so that was...
Or urinating for 20 straight hours anyways.
Anyway.
It's probably easier to stream for 24 hours than to pee constantly for 24 hours.
Stream for 24 hours.
If you're going to make another pun, I will hang up.
Go ahead, Jeeves.
So that was where the character came from. And then that was also around the time that I started writing, like, well, just responding and reading Magic Salvation a lot. Because since I was already doing all this writing, I started doing, like, set reviews on the forums. Because this was before there were, like, 1,000 set reviews per set. Like, I didn't you know, I know I wasn't the first person to do, like, a full review of, like, the entire set. But I started posting on Salvation a lot, and I started, like, replying to things in, like, mostly in the rumor mill. I also went to the debate forum, which was a huge mistake.
God, I remember the debate forum. Jesus Christ.
It was so...
Why did someone create a debate forum on the internet?
I don't know. Well, it's actually funny, because my origins of debate were on the internet, and it was fine. Like, I was in, essentially, the debate club on... Oh my god, I'm going way back. Do either of you remember the internet service Prodigy?
Yeah, actually, I do.
So, first of all, Prodigy was, like, a billion times superior to AOL. But it was, like, less user-friendly, so, you know, the troglodytes wouldn't use it, and thus it died off. You know, you didn't get to pick your own, you know, six-letter screen name. You got assigned four letters, two numbers, and then a letter A through E, depending on which account, like, who on the account you were. So, like, you know, my father was TJBR73A, and then my mother was B, and my brother was C, and I was D. That's right, I remember my fucking Prodigy username, even though it was random letters and numbers.
I'll make sure to put that in the contact info in the show notes.
Oh, yeah, if you need to get a hold of Dr. Jeebus, contact TJBR73D at prodigy.com. Although, if you were to email that, you wouldn't be emailing Dr. Jeebus, it would be Aaron the Relentless. But regardless. So that persona just kind of came with me to the Salvation Forums. And, oh my god, especially the fucking debate forum. Okay, so I started with debate on Prodigy, because they had, like, all sorts of various bulletin boards, like the old BBS systems, except nicer looking. And there was a debate one, except the debate one, like, it was, like, actual competition. Like, there would be you and another person, and you would get assigned a side of the debate. You didn't even get to choose. And then, like, it would go on for, you know, 3 days or 5 days or whatever, and then people, you know, there would be a ruling on who won, and there was order, and people debated points about topics. If you go to, like, the debate forum on Salvation, assuming it's still there, I'm sure it is, it's nothing but, like, ad hominem attacks, people yelling random shit, no semblance of logic, and, like, as much as the whole Dr. Jeebus thing is, like, an artificial creation and exhausting, I still, like, I do genuinely get angry at, like, willful ignorance. Not, like, angry, but, like, it annoys me that people would be willfully ignorant, and I want to fix them. You know, I'm like the girl who keeps going back to an abusive relationship. Like, you know, I'm the girl who thinks she can change a guy, and the guy is, like, all of humanity, and it's just not happening.
I've sat back, and I've seen you start to get angry over something, and I've wanted to be like, hey, Jeebs, you know, you can just go over here, but you're like, no, really, this time they'll take me back, and they'll understand, and they'll mean it. Oh, fuck, if I had a nickel for every time, Jeebs, I'd be a fucking millionaire by now.
I know, it's the worst, like, but it's not that hard, and, like, it's not even people who are necessarily stupid, like, again, it's just, like, ignorant doesn't mean stupid, it means you were, you know, unaware of something, and willfully so, like, even when you're being told otherwise, like, refuse it. It's the worst, like, the worst thing in the world. Hate it so much. And I know I just said I don't actually hate it. But,
It's okay, we're all hypocrites here, sir. But, so with that said, Jeebs, you know, that's kind of where things started for you with Dr. Jeebus.
Yep.
That's
so how I wound up on
things
the Salvation.
Started catching fire on the Salvation. Great. So things started catching fire on Salvation, but how did that port over into getting onto Twitter and everything else?
So I joined Twitter as a joke, because I thought Twitter was stupid.
But clearly it was fucking made for
it
you.
It absolutely is.
I created a Twitter account for the sole purpose of tweeting when I was pooping. I get it, because I thought Twitter was so stupid, and that's all it was, so I was like, fine, I'll make a Twitter account, and every time I sit down to take a shit, I'm just going to hop on my phone and be like, I'm pooping right now. And I was a goddamn adult when I thought that this was going to be a good idea. So, some sort of life choices that I have made. But, yeah, so I started as an... And then I just kind of used it as, like, an open forum to rant about shit. Because I'm like, whatever, no one's reading this shit anyway.
Oh, but they were.
Yeah, and then I got banned from the MTG Salvation forums. So then I started writing on Twitter a lot. And it turned out, I had no idea, like, I got banned from Salvation. I was like, oh, whatever, this is... I want to say, oh, whatever, this is bullshit. It was my fault. You know, I technically violated a rule, but it was with good cause, and that would have been let slide. But then I kept doing it because someone was being willfully ignorant, and I got angry, and I just... Yeah, so things happen. But I got banned, and, like, the second I got banned, there was, like, a thread in the, like, you know, the community issues, whatever. Like, you know, we demand you unban Dr. Jeebus. And the thing wound up being, like, 50 pages long. And it wasn't all people agreeing, obviously. It was, like, almost evenly split 50-50. It was, like, half the people, like, were totally in love with me and everything I did. And the other half of the people wished, you know, I would die a brutal and untimely death. But it turned, like, I didn't realize, you know, like, when I was writing for Sidlexia, you know, if I was on the Sidlexia forums, obviously I knew everyone knew who I was, because I was one of the, like, I was one of two staff members of the site. And at that point, I was the main content creator, because I was putting out, you know, 3 to 5 blog posts a week, whereas my brother was, that was when he was starting to dwindle. It was down to, like, one post a month if we were lucky. But I didn't think that, like, people on Salvation, for the most part, knew who I was. Like, I recognize, like, moderators and a few other people. Like, if someone didn't have at least 4,000 posts, I probably didn't know who they were. And not as, like, you know, post count is some status symbol. It's just I would see them more. So I would through repetition, I would recognize their name and whatnot. But it turned out a lot of people from the forums, like, found me on Twitter when I wasn't there anymore. And with Twitter being much more, basically more interactive than forums are, actually, and especially more, like, real-time, because it's much easier to do anywhere. You can do it from your phone very easily. Whereas, I mean, now you kind of can, but forum reading and responding to is still kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
On a phone. So that was, like, that was how I really became part of, like, the online community, because... The Twitter community, like, there are all the other things. There's, like, Twitter, there's all sorts of forums, there's Salvation, there's, you know, the Star City forums, forums all over websites, and now Reddit. But at the time, like, Twitter was becoming, like, the actual online Magic community, essentially. This either predates Reddit or predates Reddit mattering. I don't know when the site actually was created, but it was definitely long before the site was... relevant in any way.
And see, like, it seems weird to me too, because, like, that's again, that's another point we overlap a lot. I started a Twitter profile basically because Adina from Horde of Notions, I would be surprised if anybody actually remembers Adina on Horde of Notions. She kind of, like, very jokingly told me one time, she was like, well, for somebody that has a way with the ladies, you're extremely hard to reach. And I was like, well, I'm hard to reach by choice. And she kind of, like, kept pressuring me and kept pressuring me and kept pressuring me. And finally, I just caved, and I was like, all right, fine, I'll make a account. And I got on there, and at first I was like, oh, this is cool. You know, people followed me because I'm on Monday Night Magic. And I have regretted that life choice ever since.
I don't regret Twitter. Like, Twitter has its uses. Like, I have, you know, you get to talk to people who work at Wizards, which is useful. Actually, like, as a judge, I don't have to use it for this super often, but, like, as a regular player, you can use it for judge rulings frequently. I have to use it... If I'm using it, it's for, like, a super complex judge ruling or, like, something really obscure, like borderline, so I'll never get an answer as fast as I need, but there's all sorts of crazy things.
You can definitely connect with people who would otherwise be just inaccessible. Like, fuck, it's how I've booked, like, all the guests for this show.
and you can find people to bang, since, you know, that was why Twitter, why Jack joined his... Let me try that again. Since that was why Jack joined Twitter in the first place, so girls who wanted to bang...
Oh, yeah, like, absolutely, because, like, at the time I was single, and I was just like, hey, there's women on the internet, this is gonna be easy, they probably have low self-esteem. Never have sex with women you meet on the internet. Like, ever. Well, like, we've had very different experiences. Like, okay, so I'll interject with this story, since we've got a couple other things we're going to get to. But, you know, at one point in my life, I was somewhat of a different person, so to speak. And so I decided I was going to start looking for a lady to date on the internet. And I went on this one website that it was a really small, like, community. I think we had maybe 30 or 40 people and like 100 hits a day. Okay. And
I'm going to preface this because I said that I don't disagree with banging women from the internet. I disagree with, like, you don't look for women to bang. That's where you went wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and
when
actually,
one of the girls I dated, this girl for like 6 months. It was some, like, as far as I knew, some random person on Twitter, like, replied to something or favorited something. And I was like, oh, hey, this girl lives in Boston and is hot. And then we dated for 6 months and banged a lot. And good times were had by all. Mostly us. You guys didn't care.
I was about to say all. I don't remember being in this part of the equation.
don't remember a lot from that time, Jack. That's okay.
Yeah. I don't remember much from that time period at all whatsoever. But so anyways, I was like, okay, I'll see if I can't find a girl to date. And so I kind of started poking around, and I found this website where there was, like I said, there was maybe 30 or 40 regular members. And there was a girl on there who was very attractive, and I was just like, you know, hey, I should try talking to her. And we hit it off because she was super shy and awkward, and I was super shy and awkward. And things worked out. And then, you know, I were talking one day, and she's like, oh, you live in Forest City, North Carolina? Dude, I live in Shelby. I'm like 30 minutes from you. And I was like, oh, cool. And then, like, for, you know, whatever reason, things just never overlapped to the point where we ended up, like, meeting, right? Like, I stayed particularly busy then because I was trying to get my own business off the ground and a lot of other stuff. And just, like, it just never happened for a variety of reasons, okay? And so one day, a friend of mine on the website, he was like, hey, dude, do you have a crush on blah member? I was like, well, you know, I mean, and he was just like, Jack, everybody knows that you two are interested in each other. And I was like, oh, well, that's disheartening that it's that obvious. And he goes on to tell me that this girl had, like, had a relationship with the boyfriend of the guy she was dating, this boyfriend about, and was actually like 6 months pregnant and going to have this dude's kid that was his dad's kid. So, like, this guy's brother through some weird amalgamation of things. And yeah, I never looked for love on the internet again after that.
Wow, that's, like, every part of it that was, is wrong. Like, you don't search for it, you just stumble upon things. And if you find someone, it's not like, well, I'm gonna cultivate a relationship on the internet and see what happens. It's like, oh, hey, like, you're hot and you live near me, let's go grab a drink or, like, go to a movie or something. And, like, you move it off the internet within, preferably within, like, 48 hours of even first encountering the person.
Yeah.
Like, well, what I did
was,
so I wound up
I was like, this was also someone from the internet from North Carolina, so that's that factor, too.
Yeah, like, that's
I
that's
don't
my
even know what that
I mean, if they're within 30 North minutes Carolina. Of you, Jack, I mean, the shit you talk about your town couldn't have been
oh,
much better
dude,
when
yeah,
where
like,
they were.
Well, what's funny is, like, our town literally has nothing going on. I don't have any internet or anything, and when people talk about Shelby, which is a place that's 30 minutes from us, they're like, oh, it has a movie theater, and that's it. Like, that's the main draw, is that they have a movie theater, and people are willing to drive 30 minutes out of town to go to the movie theater because our town is so shitty. But anyways.
I have to drive, like, 20 minutes to get to the movie theater, because my town has a Bolodrome and 30 pizza places. That's it. There's not a goddamn thing to do in my town, so I don't want to fucking hear it.
But by God, if you love pizza, right?
And bowling. And we have real bowling.
Yeah.
Not that
I mean, like you could join the reenactment of the Big Lebowski League there. That could go over well.
No, they did. They didn't do Candlepin, which is real bowling. And I bet you don't even know what that is, you son of a bitch.
No, Candlepin is. I remember it because of the legend of Rip Van Winkle and the guys were playing Candlepin that he wound up drinking with, and that's about it. I know that's a really awkward way to remember something.
So Candlepin is the superior form of bowling. The balls are much smaller. The pins are smaller. I believe they're also further apart. You do get three balls instead of two because it's so much harder, but you also don't clear the deadwood in between balls, which makes it harder. No one has... You know, unlike a kingpin or a tenpin, whatever you want to call it, where, you know, bowling a 300 is pretty easy. I think the very first time I bowled a tenpin, I got... It was 200-something, definitely. Like, it was so fucking easy compared to candlepin. The highest ever recorded... Like, the highest officially recorded score in candlepin is, like, 248. Like, not even close to 300. Like, it is so much harder.
Yeah, and so much there aren't... There aren't holes in the ball, so it's right. Hard to, like, really get the... It's regular bowling's all about the spin. Like, it's not about throwing the ball particularly hard or anything. It's getting the right spin and curving it. And
you can get spin on this,
hitting
too.
Hitting the pins in the right place. It's just, it's a lot harder.
It's just, yeah, I mean, the balls are so much smaller. Like, it's... I don't... It's... Like, the first time I took my ex, because she was from Ohio, and candlepin, like, only exists here, It, like, she referred to it as, like, skee ball, basically. The balls are almost that size, but a little bigger, yeah. And much, much denser, obviously.
Yeah, I did candlepin bowling, like, in high school and as a kid and stuff.
So awesome.
All right, so, well, all of that said, over the last couple of years, too, Jeebs, you've kind of developed more of a cultivation of a following for your angry rants and also for something else you're extremely passionate about. You are a very... In my opinion, at least, well-informed, well-educated card design person. And I know you've stated a couple of times that the ultimate goal for this was to actually, you know, go work for Wizards of the Coast. Do you mind talking a little bit about that?
I mean, I would like to work for Wizards of the Coast. I think you know, if you were to poll Magic players... I don't know about a majority, necessarily, but a whole fucking lot of them would like to go work for Wizards. Like, a lot of them. Like, well, and especially in R&D, designing cards. And, like, and actually, one of my customers, he's a comic customer, but he used to play Magic, like, back in Alpha and Beta. Like, the past couple weeks he's come in, he's like, oh, you know, Hasbro's posted they have, like, a senior game designer position on their website. It's like, well, first of all, yes, I know, because I get emails from Hasbro every week with, like, every job opening they have. But also, like, I don't have qualifications for a senior designer. And I understand that, like, you can apply for jobs that you're not qualified, like, you don't have the qualifications they write down, and potentially get it if you're still the most qualified person. But, like, anytime there's a Wizards of the Coast position, I'm pretty sure they get, like, tens of thousands of applications, probably within, like, an hour of posting it. Is my guess.
Well, let me ask you a question, Jeebs. So, you know, you hear a lot about how working for Hasbro, especially on some of the more salacious websites around the internet, can be a little bit of a pleasant nightmare, I think. Was
By salacious nightmares, are you referring to Glassdoor?
Yeah. And how it can actually be kind of horrible to go work for them and things like that. But, you know, at least from my impression... even when things seem hard at WotC, it still seems like a very good, conducive environment to creative people who are passionate about the game, like yourself. But what for you personally really makes you want to go work for Wizards of the Coast?
So, okay. So here's the thing. There's, you know, I think I have read every single Glassdoor review of Wizards of the Coast. And they are... almost exclusively negative. If it is marked as a positive, if it is marked as a positive review, either it is incredibly sarcastic. Like there was one, I think it was relatively recently posted, saying how, oh, you know, you come in the morning and just check Facebook, and then you take a 2 or 3 hour lunch, which you can do multiple times a week, and then you just book a conference room for the afternoon and watch Netflix, And so it's great. And you can make a Magic Online account and just fill it with cards and sell those for cash. You know, for whatever. And you know, those are the only positive reviews I've seen. It's either stuff like that or ones that it really, really seems like the reviews are a plant. Like, it's basically like HR putting these reviews there to try and balance out their total score, basically. And I may be wrong, but that's how they read. So
yeah, I feel like the guy who wrote the review about, like, booking a conference room and watching Netflix, his actual job was to go write the good reviews. That's why there's not very many of them.
good Lord. But, so even with, like, all of the negative stuff I've seen, and, like, even people who like that they're still refer to it as, like, a stepping stone to, like, better companies because of the pay scale. But when I was, it was GP Worcester last year, like, after day one, this was when Scotty, Larry, and Jason all made day two with the Geist deck, the Modern Grand Prix.
Right.
It was like 20-something of us went out to dinner, and they were talking about that. They were talking about it as a company, but then design came up, and, you know, obviously everyone knows that I want to design cards. And they were talking about the pay scale and how it's not good. And he was, and I forget who it was in the conversation that basically directed at me. They were like, well, for people who want to design, I don't think that matters. And, like, before he started to ask me the question, and before he even finished, like, my immediate answer was, like, I don't fucking care what they pay me. Like, if I can design Magic cards, I don't care. As long as I can pay my student loans and can pay rent and have food, like, that's it. That's fine. If I make enough money to not die and not go to jail, I'm good. That's all. Like, if I get to design cards, like, yeah.
And see, like, that's part of the reason I've always, no matter what's come up in the community or, you know, opinions regarding you especially, I've always kind of pushed for people to kind of sit down and actually read your shit and really see what you're saying for a little bit, because there's not a lot of people in this community that have the amount of passion you have for card design. Like, what you just said, I'm glad you fucking said it, because I feel like that's the one thing that people really need to take away from this episode about you. You genuinely give a shit. Like, you want the game to be as good as it possibly can be. And that's fucking awesome, dude. Like, I am especially glad that we have people like that and like you in the community that care that much about the game, because, you know, sometimes I get the impression that it's not exactly reciprocated within, you know, WotC and places like that. I mean, we, like, WotC, the times that they've had mistakes or the times they may have said something that was troubling or something like that, like, they were quickly remedied without a shadow of a doubt. But, you know, it is a profession that I imagine kind of wears on people for a while. And you're one of the few I've actually talked to that you don't care. You just want to get behind that desk as much as you can. And that's fucking great, Jeebus.
Yeah, and I've actually always been that way. And I don't think, well, I say I don't think until Magic, like, I've wanted to design Magic since I was, like, 14, right? Something like that. Like, I started playing when I was 12. So, yeah, I would have been, like, 14 when I realized, like, this is what I want to be doing. But even before, like, I've always wanted to design stuff. Like, you know, when I was, like, super young, like, I started teaching myself to program when I was 7. Because I wanted to design computer games and stuff, because I enjoyed video games, so I wanted to make video games. I enjoy Magic, like, I want to design Magic. And, like, and now I started doing the same thing where I've been playing so much League of Legends, like, I was in the shower the other day and just started, like, designing, you know, possible new champions. Most of my ideas come in, well, not most, but a lot of them come in the shower. A lot of my better ideas, just because. I think it's because it's, like, this weird state. So I, as anyone who follows me on Twitter probably knows, I don't particularly sleep. Because, you know, if you look at your feed from, you know, between probably around midnight until 6 a.m., like, I'm the only person writing stuff.
Yep.
So I get about, like, I've been really bad lately. I've been closer to, like, 4 hours. I usually get, like, 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. And then, like, showers are how I wake up. Because, well, I have fallen asleep standing up in the shower before. But that aside, like, So that's when I wake up, but it's also like this weird state of like half asleep, half awake. Like, it's almost like a sleeping state where I'm fully aware of everything, like lucid dreaming, but less dreamy, more lucid.
Oh, the only reason I'm laughing is because I know exactly what you're talking about. I've had insomnia my entire fucking life, and it's you are at one with yourself, and everything's all right. Is that about right?
I don't know. I wouldn't have phrased it like a hippie for sure.
Well, I mean, I can't help it. I've absorbed the liberal propaganda from Paperboy. Okay, like spare me, sir, spare me.
All right. But I will say, like, I'm definitely not the only person passionate about magic and about, you know, and who would be passionate about designing. But there's a lot of people who are passionate about design and really suck at it. And, like, not to be mean, but, like, everyone has seen, you know, a lot of, like, the custom card websites.
Okay, they're, like, universally like, terrible.
Yeah, and, I mean...
YMTGCardsmith.com. There you go, folks. Have fun.
Yeah, there's a general rule of that, like, 90% of everything is crap. But that only applies to things that actually get published. Like, 90% of published books, or, like, 90% of TV shows that make it to air are crap. Like, all the ideas you guys have that are never getting printed or picked up by anyone, like, they're all bad. There are... I mean, like, I started during the Great Designer Search 2, which was near the beginning of when I was on Twitter, actually. So I think it was before everyone realized, like, the whole Dr. Jeebus persona. I was talking to a lot of people who did card design and who were also in it, and, like, a lot of them were bad. And, like, I think there was, like, three people who I was, you know, worried about, like, this person is potentially better than me or at least as good as me at this. And either one or two of them works for Wizards designing cards now. Like, there are a lot of people who are passionate about it. There is only one other person who I would feel is, like, any sort of challenge in terms of being capable of it that I'm familiar with. I'm sure there's other people in the world, either not on Twitter or just on Twitter, that I am not familiar with.
So, okay, 90% of everything is crap. A lot of that, what I've seen, like, based on, you know, the car blogs like you were talking about and stuff, a lot of it is people simply don't understand magic to the point that they think they understand magic. And it could be things like the color pie or a ruling or how to properly word things. Like, the biggest mistake I see on ymtgcardsmith.tumblr.com is usually people will have, like, a tutor effect, and it'll be like, yada yada card goes through your library and searches for a blah. But it doesn't say, like, put it into your hand or anything like that. And it's a lot of players actually taking shortcuts in their heads because they're players and they feel like those cards are going to translate natively to them. You see what I'm saying? So,
to be fair, I don't know how important it is for the designers to have, like, the templating perfect.
Yeah, actually, on a
like for example, like
on a recent drive to work, Maru was talking about how he's not very good at templating. Like, he doesn't template things; development does that.
Yeah, templating is a different thing, and it would still be nice if you could do it right, I would think. But it's not mandatory, and I mean,
it's easier on development to get a card that is worded that in a way that works.
Well, not only that, it's also it helps for design because. The card, you can only put so many words on a card. If you're using shorthand, and then all of a sudden the actual templating makes it so that what you want to do doesn't fit on a card, then your card can't exist. So it's useful to you to at least have, like, close-ish to the templating, so you know if what you want to do is feasible or not.
What do you mean Scheherazade's Oracle text is, like, a page and a half?
Oh my god, now I have to look it up. For whatever reason, because Scheherazade, to me, it's...
We've talked about it before. I once played a Scheherazade deck, and I just brought the Oracle text page with me. And anyone's like, what does that card do? I'm like, here's the fucking Oracle text.
Like, card-specific rulings were considered errata. So at the time, like, Ice Cauldron and Vesuvian Doppelganger were like the two most, they were considered the most eroded cards, because they each had like 5 pages of card-specific rulings. Because it's like, here's every fucking ridiculous interaction this card can create. And, but again, this is, you know, like 1997. And it was the origins of the internet, almost, like, the origins of the internet as it relates to, like, the popular world. So, you know, this could, everything that was typed there could have been gibberish and lies, and, you know, there's no way to fact check that.
Also, I mean, speaking of, like, Arad and stuff, you had, you actually, like, in game design, you created a, what is it, like, a functional Arad cube? Like, cards that just don't work the same way? Or just
it's
a
just
deck?
A deck, yeah. I don't have enough cards for
EDH
cube.
Deck?
Yep, I have an EDH deck
right.
Where every single card in the deck, including the land, is functionally eroded. except for one. The only card that does not have functional erod is R&D's Secret Lair, which is in there for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, R&D's Secret Lair lets you play cards as written, so you ignore erod.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it it's a really good thing that I have Lotus Veil and Scorched Ruins in the deck, because sometimes I'll play R&D's Secret Lair and I need to destroy it, because like it makes some cards better and it makes some cards anywhere from slightly worse to unplayable, like to unplayably bad to literally unplayable in the case of Cyclopean Tomb. Like, well, when it first came out, people were like, oh, Cyclopean Tomb has no mana cost. That means it must be zero. But no, that's not what it is. thanks to Evermind being printed, and then later the no mana cost suspend cards, like Ancestral Recall, Ancestral Visions, we now know that the absence of a mana cost means that its cost is undefined and the spell cannot be played. So, yeah, that's bad. But speaking of the, like, origins of the internet, that actually reminds me, and this was so weird. So I've actually been writing about Magic since way back then. My very first website I had before, like, I bought a domain or anything, I had a GeoCities website dedicated to Magic the Gathering. It was like geocities.com/area52/station5180 or something. I swear to God, I hope that's not correct. And if it is correct, I hope that the site is not so active. It will be so embarrassing.
Who didn't have a GeoCities back then?
No, now somebody on our listenership is actually going to go through and hunt down your old GeoCities website just to wag it in your face next time
you're running. Well, that's why I didn't say the name of it, because if I did, I'm sure someone would be able to go to the Internet Archive. Like, I know it exists on the Internet Archive project. but the difference between my GeoCities page and everyone else's is mine actually had tens of thousands of hits. Not because my writing was so good when I was a freshman in high school, but because no one else was just, like, writing arbitrary content about Magic. So, like, if you search for Magic, hey, there I am. Actually, I also wrote, it was while I had the site, I wrote an article for, at the time it was brainburst.com, which later became TCG Player. And I won a box of Urza's Destiny for my article.
Oh, cool.
Hey.
There is debate on what my article was about. It was either about why Portal sucks or why Jamie Wakefield sucks. I can't remember which one it was that won the box. And, like, the owner of the site sent me an email when I won. He was like, you know, normally this box goes to the person who wrote the best article each week, and I'm not going to say yours was the best, but it sure as hell generated the most interest in traffic. So, here you go.
That's awesome.
Early lessons that shit talking is great for traffic.
Yeah, it's like at the young age of 15, Dr. Jeebus learns the value of clickbait back in the mid-90s.
And then his road was paved before him. Was he going to be a BuzzFeed article writer? No. Jeebus had different plans. And
no one's a BuzzFeed article writer.
you were a BuzzFeed article writer?
No, I said no one is a BuzzFeed article writer.
Oh, yeah, good point. I was about to say, like a BuzzFeed
copy-paster. That's all they do. Like, there's no writing involved in working for that site.
Oh, God, if that had been the case, talk about embarrassing content. So, okay, going back to my point before we get completely fucking derailed here. So we know what makes a bad card, but what makes a good card, Jeebus? Like, what makes something that you could look at it and you could say, this is balanced, it's not going to wreck everything, this needs to be printed as is?
I mean, that's more of a development thing than a design thing. Because So I would be much better at design than development. Although, if it was my job, I'm sure I could, you know, I could I could do very well in future League. Because I used to do so much building and like building decks that I would later find out like, oh, these won tournaments when other people played them because I'm 15 and I can't drive to tournaments. And like, there's, you know, the T only gets me to Boston and like, there's not that many tournaments. You know, I don't get to travel the country to PTQs like Darwin Castle and stuff. And, so like for design, what makes a good card? There are different things.
Ultimately it's that it's fun to play. Like, I mean, there's a lot of different goals, but that's kind of what it comes down to.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't have to be fun for everyone either, because you design cards for different people.
Yeah.
So the two big things, it's kind of funny because there's two things that I think are great for making, like, for really good card design, and they completely work against each other. Usually, not always. Like, the two best things you can do are doing something that hasn't been done before. So, like when Tombstalker was first printed, like, Delve using, you know, the graveyard as a resource to cast stuff, that was brand new. And that was awesome, and that card's super powerful and stuff, to the point that they couldn't put it in Standard now. And the other thing is cards that are very simple. Simple's not the word. Elegant, that's the word. Elegant design. Like, you know, like Wrath of God that says all creatures are buried. Or all creatures in play are buried. Now, you know, obviously bury isn't a word anymore. But like, stuff like that. And, you know, combining both of them in Champions of Kamigawa when you get Time Stop, which the only three words of rules text are end the turn.
Yep.
And then there's an open parentheses, and then there's about 9 more lines of text.
Yeah.
But if you ignore that...
That one's actually both.
That's what I'm saying. That was both new. But it was new. It was a new take on an old thing, which is how you continue to make new things. Because, you know, obviously it's just a Time Walk variant. Time Walk has been around since the very first set. But it's a different way to do it. It has completely different implications... And it has, like, 9 lines of reminder text, which is why I use the 10th edition foils that don't have reminder text, which is the fucking best thing they ever did. I kind of wish that, like, they would always do that, but I know that costs them money because they have to do extra templating and blah, blah, blah. So those are the two big things I think you want to hit on in terms of, like, what makes really good design is elegant cards and cards that do things we haven't done before and let people experience the game in new ways. Not everything you get to design is exciting either. Like, I guess Pillar Field Ox is elegant. Like, it doesn't... You know, it is what it is. And... But, like, unfortunately, like, if you're designing a set, like, you know, like there are a lot of slots for Pillar Field Ox.
Yeah, strangely,
and you
that's
have to sit
probably...
there, you have to do it.
That's probably the hardest aspect of Magic design, is designing those shit commons that every set has to have. Like, and getting them to do kind of what they're needed to do. Like, it's almost like it's easy to design powerful cards. That's not hard. Designing cards that are not very good, but, you know, they fill some marginal little role, those are hard.
I disagree.
Like,
I found designing... Okay, designing them is easy, but then, like, balancing them becomes hard.
Yeah, like, getting the right one for the set, like...
Well, I mean, because, so a couple of years ago, I designed a full set for National Novel Writing Month, because that's kind of like a novel, I guess.
Yeah.
That was why I did it. And yeah, I thought doing the commons for the most part was really easy. It was much easier than doing the rares. It was also less fun, but at the same time, it's like, okay, I'm designing all these things, you know, they fit the theme of the set, they should, I think, all be balanced and make the colors fair, but I have no idea, because I'm not playing with this yet, and well, obviously I never did, because I didn't print it or anything. So, I mean, I think that's something that with practice comes, in, like, being able to balance all the commons in a set. And, you know, that's where it goes to development with what Jack was talking about, with, like, how do you design cards that are balanced and aren't going to break things. And if you're just, if you're trying to do something new, you have no fucking idea. You know, the way you design them, basically, is you just have to design it and, like, test it and see what happens. And I think it's important to design things knowing that they might get cut because they're too powerful. At the Avacyn Restored, well, the Magic Panel PAX East, when it was Avacyn Restored coming out, like, they flat out said, when they were revealing Miracles to us, they didn't show us which one. I believe Entreat the Angels is the miracle they showed us. Well, I know they showed us Thunderous Wrath. I think they showed Entreat the Angels as a mythic, maybe. They mentioned that the blue one, they were terrified that it was going to be too powerful.
Yeah, if you look at design from the past 3 or 4 years, they're clearly scared to death of time walk effects.
Well, like, but that's not my point, though. And, like, obviously it was Bonfire. Well, I guess they kind of work together, though. Like, so they were terrified that was going to be too powerful, but they did it anyway. Because, that means they tested with it, and they couldn't break it. And then, you know, later it turned out that Bonfire of the Dam was a huge fucking mistake, and, you know, they shouldn't have done that. But I do think it is important in design that, you know, like, if you're working at Wizards, like, you know, not all the time, but you have to put cards out there that there's a good, like, there's a chance that this is just too fucking powerful and it's gonna have to be cut from the set, but we have to at least try. Like, it is a good enough design that we have to throw this out there and see what happens. And that's like when I was designing my set, I wanted, you know, like, it's kind of like an homage to Phyrexian Dreadnought. I wanted, like, a giant fucking one mana creature. And I went through, like, God, I think I went through, like, 15 iterations of the rules text trying to figure out how can I make this card actually be, like, relevant and playable, and, well, like, even though you would have to jump through hoops to not have it kill you, without it being, like, completely fucking broken. And it's kind of a nice thought exercise, I guess, but it gets to the point where you have to say, like, you know, we want to try this, you know, let's go fucking playtest. Someone develop, see if this is even remotely doable. And that's the only way you can find out if something's broken. Like, you can theorycraft all you want, but you're going to miss things. Like, you're going to look at temporal manipulation, temporal mastery, rather, and you're going to think, this is probably broken and we're really scared. And then something like Bonfire is going to happen, and you're not going to realize how powerful that is. So I think
what
I have
you're
more
saying
than
is,
answered your question.
Yeah. So, and I've got to agree with you yet again, because, you know, the times Wizards has made mistakes that I think actually came back to bite them, perhaps either in the long run or, you know, one that first dropped or something like that. Like, let's take Termagoyf, for example. Goyf is a very popular example. You know, I don't think necessarily they knew how bad Goyf was going to be. And admittedly, the creation story of Goyf is that Goyf was kind of a last-minute design, I think, was it Aaron Forsyth, correct?
I don't know, actually. I don't know who made it.
It was either Mark or it was Aaron. I don't remember who. but they weren't totally sure it was going to become what it was, basically.
I don't think Hammergleich was a mistake, for the record.
Okay, well...
Hammergleich is fine.
Well, it's one that was... It was originally supposed to cost 1 GG, and they just... Someone was like, this sucks, and took a mana off it, like, at the last minute. Like, there's so many cards like that that we view as mistakes now that had a mana cut at the last minute. Like, Ravager, I think, was supposed to... Its ability was supposed to have a mana cost. Like, Disciple of the Vault was supposed to cost 2 mana. You know, Ravager was supposed to have an activated cost and cost...
Disciple 3. Was supposed to cost 2 mana?
Yeah.
I mean, like
Skullclamp went through a number of changes to push that before it got printed.
Yeah.
Like, well, that minus one that was supposed to be a drawback, but actually was kind of what made it is broken.
See, that's what I always thought, and it was actually the opposite. The minus one was to push it. It was... So they thought the card was useless as plus one, plus O. So the minus was to make it more powerful, but they didn't... The rest of the story is still the same. They didn't have time to test it, so they just printed it, and
I think
had to put it out like that.
Yeah, I think that's another one that got a mana shaved off it, too.
No, I don't believe so. I think it was just the minus one that changed. Because don't forget, that was the first, you know, Mirrodin was when equipment was created, and they had no idea what equipment was supposed to cost. And that's why the swords were so fucking unfair, and that's why completing the cycle years later, when we do know what equipment is supposed to cost, was not a particularly good idea. Because now we know better. Now we know this is not, you know, these are way too good.
But
weirdly, though, I don't know if the swords were as much of a problem as Batterskull. Like, that card was more of
a mistake.
Yes,
they were.
Like,
No, Batterskull is less of a mistake. Batterskull is essentially, like, is usually just a recursive 4/4 lifelink vigilance creature for 5. But, I mean, you could add mana onto it, but it doesn't matter because you're using Stoneforge Mystic to put it into play anyway.
Yeah. Well, like, so, that was the card that really broke Stoneforge Mystic in Standard. Like, it was powerful and effective with, you know, with sort of Feast and Famine, but just, it was Batterskull that made game states just absolutely degenerate and stupid.
But, I mean, Cobblade was already dominating before New Phyrexia came out, though. Like, let's not pretend that Batterskull was, you know, what pushed the deck over the edge. It was already stupidly powerful.
That was the thing that just, like, really, really warped the format.
Well, okay, we could actually talk all day about this, guys, but Jeeves, it sounds like, you know, what you're saying is that it's okay to encourage these kind of dangerous approaches to design a little bit, too, because that's what makes us more wary of our mistakes and our triumphs, right?
No.
just say yes. Just say yes. We'll move on.
No, I was saying you need to be willing to take those risks. Yeah. Because otherwise, cool shit's just never going to happen if you don't take that chance. But you also have
that
to be
makes...
you have to be prepared to cut those things if they turn out to be giant mistakes before you go to print.
Okay, there we go.
I think
there
Richard Garfield once famously said something along the lines of, like, if you don't get a card banned every year, you're not pushing the envelope enough as a designer. Like, you're just doing it wrong.
Wow, I totally disagree with that.
Well, it's not something they go by now, but it was something Garfield said, like, many years ago.
I think that was because they didn't playtest back then, so it was probably true. Because that's why the color hosers from back then all exist. Remember, talking to Aaron Forsyth about this, like, cards like Perish exist because, like, well, we don't playtest Standard, but green might be too powerful. So here's Perish. Oh, white might be too powerful, too. Here's Dead of Night. Oh, but black might be too powerful, so here's Light of Day. And, like, oh, Necro might not be powerful enough, so here's Dystopia, so you can destroy all the answers to the deck. Yay, Black Summer.
Yay, Dystopia.
Oh, my
God. I feel like to some degree they still do that, but not as much for colors. Like, but they'll put, like, these weird safety valves in sets that are, like, kind of unnecessary. And more often we'll just, like, kill off, like, a tier 2 deck that wasn't really any good anyways. Like, you know, like, when they took Grafdigger's Cage in Dark Ascension, like, there wasn't really a flashback deck. But then they, like, made that card and just kind of fucked it anyways. And, like, at the end of Scar's Block, they threw in Creeping Corrosion, which that card just pisses me off, because, like, it's creeping, and it destroys all artifacts all at once. I'm like, no, that's poorly named. That's terrible. You know, and, like, I absolutely knew
I'll,
that.
I'll take that point, that it's a poorly named card.
Yeah. And I absolutely
As opposed to Graft of Your Cage, it's kind of a weird... Well, both of them, it's kind of a weird scenario, because, like, it was my impression, for years they had said you don't print hate cards for the theme of a block in that block, and both of those are hate cards for the theme.
Yeah.
But at the same time, both of those also saw tournament play. So, I don't want to say that they weren't necessary. Like, they both saw tournament play, and actually they, I think they both continue to. I know. I mean,
they
I know
Graft Digger's Cage. In modern and in vintage. Graft Digger's Cage is a part of the,
Well, I know Graft Digger's Cage is in them. Creeping Corrosion is still a modern board card. I think? Question mark? Maybe? Yeah.
But, like, all during Theros Block, I just knew that M15 was going to have Back to Nature in it. I'm like, we're just getting all, like, this, you know, enchantment block where, you know, almost none of these are actually really playable, but I know there's going to be a fucking Back to Nature in M15. You know, just be like, you know, fuck that block, we're moving on to a new one.
Well, you say almost none of them were playable, but there was also an enchantment deck that, like, was winning tournaments.
Hmm. Yeah, but, like, it's... Yeah, I mean, there's the constellation thing, but that, I mean, that card, that was a problem in block. Like,
it's better to have answers. Like, I would rather print powerful decks and print answers to them than just print multiple powerful decks with no answers to anything.
Yeah. I don't know, I sometimes don't like it when the cards that are, when they make, like, several cards that are clearly built to fight one specific card,
So then you don't like Sulfur Elemental, is what you're saying?
I actually love Sulfur Elemental. But no, like, but
that's,
there's
you,
so many
cards.
Do
you know where that card came from? Because if you, like, because it's the same exact sort of thing, like.
I don't know the origin of that one specifically.
So, Planar Chaos, it was, like, getting close to the deadline of, you know, we need to push the set out to print. And all of a sudden, like, very shortly before. Like, tournament players realized it. R&D realized, like, oh shit, Martyr of Sands is good. We need to print a creature that answers that, and it has to have split second, so they can't sack their martyrs in response. And that's why Sulfur Elemental exists.
Yeah. I don't know, that card was just kind of good otherwise. But I'm talking about, like, in the past few years we've got, or the past year or so, we've gotten a bunch of cards designed. Like, clearly just designed to fight Elsbeth, which are kind of annoying. Like, Wingmate Rock is designed to fight Elsbeth. Like, Silumgar, the Drifting Geth, is absolutely built to fight Elsbeth. And it's just like...
Because they have three power instead of four?
Yeah, because they have three power, and Silumgar also has the -1/-1 effect.
So you're saying if it, like, weren't for Elsbeth, Wingmate Rock would be 2/4/4s?
I don't know about that specifically, but, like... Something about that card is clearly designed for that. Silumgar's worse. Like, Silumgar's obviously designed just to fight against Elsbeth. I don't know.
I'm going to completely disagree with both of them. So, Wingmate Rock, like, so, basically, if it weren't for Elsbeth, Wingmate Rock would be an 8/8 flyer for 5 instead of a 6/8 flyer for 5. And that's what it should have been, because an 8/8 flyer for 5 mana is fair. And you're saying
or it might have been like 4/4s for 6. And you know, more saying, like Broodmate Dragon.
I mean, 3/4s are fine. Yeah. I think. I don't actually think. I'd have to double check. I think rocks always have power of 3. Crimson Rock, I believe, was a 3/3 that could become a 4/3, but that was also Mirage. I would have to double check on that, though. But I'm pretty sure rocks in general have 3 power anyway. And then Silumgar, that having, like, if that had 4 power, Elsbeth still isn't going to do shit to it, because when you cast it, you're just going to steal their Elsbeth anyway.
Not the new Silumgar. Drifting Death.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess. Like, does Elsbeth even see play right now?
Well, it saw more before Silumgar the Drifting Death was printed. That's for sure.
I mean, I didn't think those control decks really still existed, and now that we have, Manifest Infinite Life, that White just wasn't even going that way. Maybe, I haven't been following Standard a ton lately. Cause
yeah, I mean, before Fate Reforged, Elspeth was a pretty important card. Like, it was never played as more than a 2-of, but it was a very important 2-of.
All right. So I actually have a question.
But that's the thing. Like, sometimes they'll print these cards that are obviously built to fight one card, and that card sometimes won't even be relevant. Or, like, it'll be fringy, and then it just becomes unplayable.
I don't know. I still disagree that Silumgar is obviously designed to fight Elspeth. Like, honestly, I like the design. I hate that
it dodges the minus, and it kills the soldiers that the plus makes. Like,
but it's part of a fucking cycle of dragons. They all have an ability when dragons attack. And, like, do you want it to just fucking mill cards? Is that the only thing blue and black does in your mind? Like, what's wrong with doing this?
There's nothing wrong with it. Like, it fits, but it's still so clearly targeted at one card.
Like, all right. You're right. You win. Silumgar is dominating Standard, and he's pushed Elspeth down to both. You win. I can't argue
okay,
with
so
you.
Okay,
yeah, like, they're both still good cards, but, like, that interplay just stands out as, like, really glaring.
Right. Okay, so, gentlemen.
Like, I think if Elspeth didn't exist, it would probably be, a 5-5, you know, or a 4-6 or something. The fact that it's a 3-7, like, is because of Elspeth.
Like, Black is... Yeah, we can hear you, Jack.
Okay.
Black is the color that gets, like, small front and big butts. You know, I prefer big front and big butts on my black. But anyway.
yeah, you would.
I don't know. Dragons aren't usually that unbalanced in terms of power and toughness.
Not usually, no. But it fits with both black creatures and blue creatures. They both have smaller power than top. Like, that's the color that would have that. Jack, I think Jack wants to talk now.
Okay, yes, now that I can interject, even though that was great radio. So, Jeebus, another thing quite a few people might actually know about you is that you actually run a card shop, or co-run a card shop with somebody, if I'm led to believe.
I run the Magic stuff in it. I don't, like, own it or anything like that. There's two owners and myself.
Okay, cool. So, you've got to have quite a few, let's say... inspirations for your more spirited rants on Twitter that come from running a Magic shop. What do you like about it, and what do you absolutely despise about it? Because if I remember correctly, you were probably the first person that I heard say Magic players would stab their own mother over a nickel.
I have never said that in my life.
I'm pretty sure you said it on Twitter at one point.
Now that I think about it, I don't think I am comfortable saying I have never said in my life. I don't remember saying that.
My memory always runs very long, especially on the embarrassing stuff. But that said, what do you enjoy about working with Magic players and kind of the MTG finance end of things, and what do you absolutely despise about it?
What I like is money, and what I despise is people. No, I mean, like, I don't know. It is what it is. Like buying cards is fine. Selling cards is fine. I don't find it super interesting to talk about. Like, I'm not going to say, like, oh, I go through people's binders and this is how I poke out. Like, no one fucking cares. We buy cards and we sell cards and we run tournaments. And I've spoken at length about running tournaments before on other casts, mostly complaining, like, I would always rather be playing in a tournament than running a tournament. Always.
Oh, I completely agree, because I've had to be the beard wrangler, as it were, at tournaments, because we don't really actually have a judge at our store. We just have a lot of very well-informed players that actually know what the fuck they're doing for once. Mm-hmm. But, like, wrangling a group of people into actually getting a tournament organized and running smoothly and everything is a complete operation unto itself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I don't find it that hard. Basically, we start on time, and I don't give a fuck if you're ready or not. Like, if you're not ready, that's your fault, not mine. Or, excuse me, or it could be I-95's fault, in which case I'll be slightly forgiving. but, like, I don't know. I do get some funny stories from the store, and actually this is a story I've been wanting to tell for weeks. I wanted to come on originally, like, 2 weeks ago to tell the story. And it is not in any
way. Oh, I remember this one.
Yeah, I texted
it to you. Please tell
him. Yeah, so you've heard this. Jeff has not heard this before. I had wanted to come on the show 2 weeks ago to tell this because it happened on a Wednesday, because Wednesday's New Comic Day, so that's when everyone comes in. And, like, wow. So, not related to Magic, not even a Magic player who said it. It was a comic guy. So one of our customers comes in, and he was super excited because he had just bought, like, a brand new, like, really expensive video camera. Because it turns out he and his brother, it has been, like, I don't know if it was lifelong, but for some long amount of time, it has been their dream to make a movie. Now, they're both, I assume they're both the same age. They're both, like, 50-something, like, early 50s, I think. The guy who comes to our store, clearly, like, you know, he works in, like, he has some, like, awful dead-end job and just wants some creative outlet and has... He fully realizes he is not going to make a fucking penny off of this movie. His brother is apparently completely fucking delusional, thinks they're going to make this movie, put it on YouTube, and get millions of dollars, because that's how YouTube works. So he was telling us about it. So first he comes in, and he talks to my boss. He manages to both like compliment and insult my boss at the same time, which is pretty talented. So he's telling my boss about the movie, like, the first one they came up with. It was, actually, I'm sorry, this was the second one. The first one he told us about. You know, it's about, like, two brothers, because obviously they're going to star in the movie as well as make it, because why not? That's how you get millions of dollars on YouTube. So it's like, one of them's kind of a jerk, and the other one's a good guy, and then by the end of the movie they switch, and it's, like, super clever, because that's never been done before. Ever.
Ever, 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 ever.
But he was telling my boss, you know, because, like, my boss is Italian, not like crazy stereotypical Italian, but still Italian. So he says to my boss, he's like, yeah, you know, there's a part in this movie that you would be perfect for. Like, I read it, and as soon as I read it, I thought of you. You know, it's this club owner in the movie, and like, all we'd have to do is just sleaze you up a little bit more, and you would be perfect for this role.
That's Christ.
It's like, you couldn't just say sleep, like, you had to say more? Like, he's, like, first of all, just come out and say what you, like, want
to
say. Like,
I'm coming to you, because I think you're sleazy already.
Well, what he's really trying to say is, we just need to make you look a little more Italian. But, and, I mean, that's because this is Boston, that's probably why we assume that's what he meant, and it is what he meant. But yeah, like, you had to use the word more? But so that was the first one, and then he tells us, or that was the first one he told us, then he tells us about the other script his brother wrote. Which, again, you know, it's two brothers. You know, one of them, like, one of, so not the one who comes to our store, it would have been his brother and, like, his girlfriend go to Vermont, and they get kidnapped by a gang of rednecks, and he's supposed to, you know, go and, like, save them. But he's reading the script, and then, they get kidnapped by this gang of rednecks. And then, like, the guy gets raped by all of them. And he's reading this.
Because... And he's, like, never, ever, ever heard of Deliverance, ever.
I guess. But regardless, like, so he's reading this, and he asks his brother, because, like, I guess it was written pretty graphically. He's like, why would you write this part for yourself? Like, are you actually just going to let a bunch of rednecks fuck you in the ass? It's like, well, you know, you do what you gotta do to make a movie. Like, that's not an answer.
You've got creative control.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. It's like, well, you know, it's the story kind of got away from me. I started writing. It took on a life of its own, you know, blah, 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 blah. And, like,
and yeah, like, I'm gonna get fucked in the ass, and that's how this works.
Like, just that response with, like, so I've been saying that, like, for weeks now. It's like, eh, sometimes you gotta do what you gotta do to make a movie.
Alright, I've got a good customer story, and Jeff, I'm sure you've got one in you as well, before we round things out here for the evening. So I've told this story a few times before, and Javis, I might have even told it on Jinxed Idols, the first podcast that you and I actually did together a long time ago with Tangent.
Well, the first one that we hosted together, you did guest on an episode of Public Enemies.
Oh, God, Public Enemies was so fucking long ago. And, like, I think that was actually the first time, like, me and you sat down and had, like, a real conversation. And I know I fucked that up. Like, I can admit to that.
Honestly,
like,
I don't even think I knew who you were. Tangent was like, oh, yeah, he's like, it's Jack. He's, like, the host of Monday Night Magic. I'm like, all right, like, what's Monday Night Magic? It's like, you know, Monday Night Magic, like, the first Magic podcast, the reason that we're all fucking here.
What
like,
the fuck is a podcast? All right,
I thought we were three angry guys that liked yelling. But, all right, we'll go with this.
Yeah, and you guys had just had, like, an entire, what was it, the blind player, I think it was, had just kind of, like, started making the news in the community where he had, like, perforated the sleeves on his car.
Wait, were were you on episode two, the Dr. Jeebus Hates Blind People?
Yeah, maybe. And
okay, that's, like, one of my best
episodes. Yeah, and you had, like, gone on your rant.
Way back in the way, there was a... There was a similar story about a guy doing that in the Star Wars CCG around here, up in New England. Who had, like, Braille on, like, his card sleeves.
Yeah, Jeeves had actually, like, the episode I came on was the one after Jeeves had just gone on this, like, hour and a half long rant.
Oh,
about, like,
rage.
Deaf people.
That was the episode of the name of the episode.
About, like, deaf people or blind people or something like that. And I came on and said, the first thing I said was something about, like, I tried making this really bad forced joke about Jeebus being angry at deaf people. And then I said something like, well, we're going to have to get subtitles for this episode as well or some shit. And I could just hear the collective disappointment in his voice. And that's really how the friendship started, I think. Like, I think that's how it all got started. But, okay, so, yeah, God, customer story, and I've told this one a few times, and I might have even told it on Public Enemies a long time ago, which I want to say I helped you come up with the name, sir, and you gave me full credit, and I appreciate that. But, yeah, so I find everything in people's computers, okay? Like there's something about, like, I guess people think the computer is a magic box that never gets open, which is true. I can attest to that because people usually let so much dust and shit build up in their computer, it burns them out.
That reminds me. I need to clean my laptop out. Thank you.
You're welcome.
of dust, not porn, you fucking douchebags.
No. But, like, people physically will put things inside of computers to, like, hide them from people in their house. And I found, like... Yeah, like, I've found, like, several people who actually took Maddox's advice and actually hid their pornographic magazines inside the case of the computer, okay?
Oh, my God.
One time I found an entire gallon-sized bag of weed, which the guy did not get back. I can neither confirm nor deny that I actually partook of the substances, but the guy did not get it back. That's all I'm going to say. And, so...
I mean, what's he gonna do, come back and be like, yeah, I had half a pound of weed in this computer when I gave it to you.
But no. Dude, what was fucking
great
about
forgotten.
That? Yeah, dude, like, what was fucking great about that, though, is that happened, and that was obviously, like, something you would keep track of. You know what I mean? That guy's a repeat customer to this day. I am not even joking. He's never brought it up, and he is one of my best customers. But,
you keep that much weed around, you're gonna forget shit like that.
Oh, dude,
You don't lose
awesome
that
guy.
Much.
He actually was. Yeah, like, he was actually the inspiration behind one of the characters in one of the stories I wrote. Just because he's like this grandfatherly type guy. He's an old redneck. You know, his wife's dead. All his kids have moved out. And he, like, lives by himself and his coon dog. And he just drinks beer all day because he's retired. He's fucking awesome. I love him to death. But, so anyways, the weirdest shit I've ever found inside of somebody's computer there. Was I was opening the side of the computer, because usually, like, the last thing I do is I blow the dust out of it, and I wipe it down with, like, Clorox wipes and everything to make sure everything's clean on the outside and clean on the inside. And I open it up, and there is this bag that is kind of, like, old and crumpled and, like, has red stuff on the inside of it. And I'm all like, oh,
is it an
what's this?
Bag?
No. This is far worse. I was like, oh, what's
worse
this
than an enema bag that somehow is filled with blood since you said red stuff?
Yes. So I open it up and I look inside, and I always put gloves on before I open shit inside people's computers. And inside it looked like what I thought was deer teeth. Okay, because we have a ton of hunters in this area. I mean, I go hunting every fall. And if you're not 100% certain, you know, like if you don't actually see it, like deer teeth can look like other teeth. And so I reached inside there with my gloved finger and I pulled it out, and it was a fucking molar from a human being. And I was just like, and I dropped it, right? I sat there for like 30 minutes and I was just like, what, like, what the fuck do I do? Like, do I call the police? Like, why is there a bag of teeth in this computer? And so,
oh wait, what ended up, was it the entire bag molars?
It was all molars. Like, none of them were like canines or like front teeth or anything like that. They were all molars.
It was just like, yeah, so they're not his then.
Yeah. So this was really creepy, and like I call this dude up, and I'm going over like everything that happened, because I had just decided to like write it off at this point, not talk about it, not bring it up with him, you know, that kind of thing. And all of a sudden, just like my mouth overran my brain, and it was like, yeah, so we were cleaning out your computer, and there was a bag of human teeth inside of it. Is that like, you know, of any particular relevance to you? And the guy kind of paused for a minute, and then he was just like, oh, yeah. And that's all he said. And so, like, this dude came to the shop, and I had his computer waiting for him, and I had the bag of human teeth sitting on top, and he paid for everything in cash, and I never heard from him again.
How much did you charge him for the teeth?
Well, like, this was the weird thing, too. Like, there wasn't anything actually wrong with the computer. It just needed, like, general maintenance done to it. But, like, finding the bag of teeth, I was just like, oh, God, this has to be worth the money. Like, I will totally be Judas Iscariot in this situation and just sell this fucker out. Like, I forget what I charged him. I think it was maybe $80 total for everything, for what would have been, like, a $50 job. Oh, dude, I should have charged him more, but, like, I have told that story so many fucking times.
That guy was clearly a fucking serial killer, Jack. I don't know why you did anything but take those teeth straight to the cops. Like,
well, I mean, I did have this entire gallon-sized bag of, like, marijuana that I just previously got out of a computer, so we'll leave it at that. I was paranoid, man. I was paranoid. But, Jeff, surely you've got one good customer story again, before we round out for the night and give contact information, because this has been going on way longer than I thought it would.
Yep, oh, Jeff's jerking off. That means the show's over.
yeah, I say we record with no pants. No, I don't really have a good customer service story. Like, I just dealt with a lot of shitty customers over the phones, and that's not nearly as much fun.
Like the guy who was trying to order porn.
Yeah, but I mean, I've told that fucking story.
What's the most awkward story, like, that you've had to deal with then?
I don't know. I mean, it was super awkward. Like, anytime there were, like, porn charges, and you had to, like, sometimes you had to actually read the titles of what what movies had been ordered.
Oh, dude, porn stories are fun, though. Like, it's so funny.
I grew up with the internet, so I'm so jaded to these things that I don't really give a fuck about reading about, like, you know, big tit moms 9 and, like, you know, schoolgirls get fucked by black dicks. Like, it didn't bother me. Like, they were mostly bad names. Like, they were more funny than anything. Like,
Dildo Swaggins?
No, nothing that fun.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah, actually, I've got one good porn story here, and then we'll end it out for the night. Okay, so like 90% of the time, if there's porn on a computer, there's either a teenage boy in the house, or the dude is just so, like, it's like a 50 or 60 year old guy. Like, him and his wife have not had sex in 6 years, you know? So we had this guy come into the,
it could just be a couple that's like kinky and happens to have porn on.
Oh, God, that reminds me of another one. Okay, I'll tell two stories then, since Cheap is...
I don't know why you assume that it's only people not having sex that enjoy porn.
Well, yeah, that's in mind.
That's an unfair assumption.
Okay, so let
maybe
me
find out if you're,
maybe in the subset of people who are then bringing their computers to Jack for computer repair.
I guess. Anecdotal evidence. Everyone loves porn. The end.
Yep.
Okay. So anyways, look. I have this, typically, like, when we have elderly customers, it's either going to be a headache or they're nice old people that genuinely don't understand technology and I go out of my way to help them. And, like, the more likely they are to have, like, certain ailments, the more my heart aches for them just because I'm weird like that. So I'm sitting at the front desk.
Empathy. That's so cute.
I'm sitting at the front desk and this guy comes in and I see his walker. So immediately I'm getting up and I go to the door and I'm trying to hold the door for him. And I notice that this dude is on an oxygen tank too. And I'm just like, oh, shit. Right. So I go out to his car and I bring his computer in and he tells me everything going on with it. And I'm like, man, don't worry about it. And in my head, I'm already like, man, this guy's going to get a discount. I'm going to help him out. I'll have a good repeat customer. And so I go back there and I'm putting it on the table and there's just like all this fucking porn on the computer. And this guy was easily like 88, 89, 90. Okay. And there's just all this porn on the computer. And I was just like, God, like his teenage grandson got on this or his son got on this and fucked it up. What the fuck? And so I'm cleaning everything off of it. And I had just cleaned off this like 10 gigabyte porn collection. All right. Which this was early 2000s. No, not early 2000s, but like mid 2000s.
Did he call you back after returning the computer?
No.
Yeah. So, where's my porn, son of a bitch?
No. So I'm getting ready to quit for the night. And I get a call on the business line. It's like 9:30, something like that. And I pick up the phone, and he's asking me how everything's going. And I'm trying to be nice to him because old people, like, they treat computers like cars. Like, they never take them to the shop, and they call constantly to make sure everything's going okay. And I'm just, you know, I'm being very generous and polite with him and trying to be understanding. And then finally, he's like, well, I got one more question for you. Have you made sure my porn's coming in crystal clear? And for a moment, I'm just like, I don't know what the fuck to say because this dude came in a walker with an oxygen tank. And I'm already just like, holy shit, like my hat is off to this motherfucker simply because like he is that fucking old and still gets an erection. This is amazing. And I was just like, well, sir, yep, I'll make sure it's coming in great. So then I had to go in with one of our data recovery programs and actually recover the 10 gigs of this guy's over the next 4 hours. It was great. But no, okay, I've got one more bad customer story, and then we'll close out because this thing's 2 fucking hours long. But so we encounter a wide swath of people in this county, but normally like you get a feel for people where it's like the middle-aged couple, you know, or the farmer or the whatever. And so we had this middle-aged, like back in the day when I first started working with my dad at our first business, we had this middle-aged couple come in and they were wearing like nice clothes. The man was dressed in a suit and he was like overweight and balding. And then he had his little wife with him who was wearing her like Sunday dress and her pearls and shit, right? And we got their computer and I put it up on the table. And as soon as I booted up, there's a wallpaper of the man in buttless chaps with International Swingers Convention 2003 and a very large banner over the top. Like, it was like a party he went to, and they had snapshotted this, and this was their wallpaper. And I was just, like, fucking flabbergasted because this dude looked like Kyle Gass from Tenacious D. Okay? And, yeah, and so, like, I changed the wallpaper really quick, and, like, I cleaned the computer, and, like, come to find out these people were, like, enormous swingers and into the whole, like, fetish life and all this other stuff. And so it gets to where their computer's done, and Dad's going to take it back out to them. And I'm just like, Dad, those people are freaks. Like, you need to, like, watch yourself. And I told him about the wallpaper and all this shit. And Dad just got so pissed off. He's like, Jack, they're not like that. They're good people. They're good Christian people. And you're being judgmental, young man. And you need to learn not to be judgmental. I swear I'm going
to
go.
Why would you just refer to them as freaks because they're swingers?
Because my dad is more conservative than anybody I have ever met in my entire fucking life. Like, very right-wing, ultra-conservative kind of guy. Okay, and this kind of stuff disturbs
me. You know, you can believe... Jack, you can believe in small government and still believe in, like, wife swapping, all right? It's not. You don't have to push your politics on everything.
Well, no. Like, what I'm saying is, like, Dad, like, this kind of stuff, it freaks him out, okay? And so I'm sitting there, and I'm just like, So Dad goes, and he comes back about an hour later, and just, like, all the color is drained from his face. And I'm just like, so, how'd it go, man? And he was like, well, I gave them their computer, and they proceeded to ask me for a threesome. And I don't really know what to say to that, Jack. what would you do in my situation? And I was like, well, did he answer in the buttless chaps? He was like, shut up, go in the back, do some work. Oh, but anyways, guys, it's getting fucking late, and we've exhausted, obviously, everything we had to say. So, Jeebus, again, thank you very, 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 very much for joining us tonight. I feel like we've gotten some great audio about card design out of you, and that's a boon, dude. And, come out from behind the curtain more often, goddammit. We would love to have you back on, okay?
Yeah, I was still surprised that, like, we talked about Magic the entire time. I was led to believe that this was not a Magic podcast.
Well, I think we're on episode 19, and you are on one of maybe three episodes that we've actually talked about Magic. And it was good shit.
I am on at least two episodes in which you have talked about Magic, thank you.
Oh, that's right, the Christmas episode. Yeah, so you've been on two of the three episodes. Oh, dude, that episode was fucking amazing in post. Like, holy shit, the output of that was amazing. But anyways, Jeebus, if you don't mind, dude, that was a lot of fun. We definitely need to do another one if we make it to the end of this year. But Jeebus, where can people reach you if they want to angrily send you horrible things or read some of your more insightful writing?
If you would like to reach me, you can contact vixbymail.com. For the low cost of $15 plus shipping, they will send a literal bag of dicks to someone anonymously. That someone could be me if you have my address. They are gummy dicks. They are not human dicks like Jack finds inside computers. But yeah, they
will
receive.
One of these days.
No, yeah, I just wanted to mention this, and so I guess now this is when I do it. But yeah, I just saw this today. I guess the site's relatively new. I don't know how old. Like, the earliest I've heard anyone hearing about it was a couple weeks ago. They will just anonymously send packages to people with a bag of gummy penises and just a piece of paper that in giant fucking letters says, eat a bag of dicks. And there it is. Like that's fucking awesome. Like, that is like a literal game changer for all of society. Like, you can just send, if you know someone who's a dick, or, just, boom, eat a bag of dicks. And I think it was the first review on their website, the dicks taste delicious. So you will be insulted by the note, but then you will enjoy the flavor.
And they come in a wide variety of colors, so there's that. Because they don't discriminate a bag of dicks.
Yeah, I mean, they're gummy, so, like, you gotta have them in all your standard gummy worm / gummy bear flavors. And by flavors, I mean colors, because they all taste the same. If you actually want to reach me, I do like gummy bears, though, so maybe I would like these. So, yeah, send me a bag of dicks if you have my address. If you actually want to reach me, if you want to see my writing, it is at mtgbrodeals.com. Do we have cute little tabs so you can just search for me and ignore everyone else? Otherwise, you can reach me on Twitter as Dr. Jeebus, DR_Jeebus, with two E's, which everyone in the entire fucking world except Jay Bush knows how to spell. You can email me at Dr. Jeebus, again, DR_Jeebus, at mtgbrodeals.com, and that's it. And you can also find me, you can't find me on Magic Online anymore, really. I have not used that in forever because the client is such shit. And, Worth Walpert has, rather than fixing the program, he just goes on Twitter and sasses people. He actually sassed me today for asking him, like, an actual question. Basically, when he was younger, he and his friends literally burned multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars, like, set them on fire. And I asked why, and then he just, like, sent me, like, a sassy YouTube video with profanity as a reply, so. There's the head of Magic Online. Our company.
Wow. Awesome. That's wonderful.
Yeah. But you can find me on League of Legends as Dr. Jeebus Actual, because someone stole my fucking name. And that's it. In and out the region,
Jeff? Yeah, I'm at LoGuppy. Cast is at Not Another MTG, Not Another Magic Podcast at gmail.com. I also did what's got, like, next week I'm probably doing the last. I'm probably going to finish up Grim Fandango and have to pick a game to go on after that. Cause yeah, last week I did all of year three in one sitting. So gonna finish that up. That's twitch.tv/loguppy.
Cool. Is that it? All right. The easiest place to reach me is, of course, on Twitter at Jack LaCroix. I'm extremely not safe for work because I like to study the effects of gravity on boobies. You can also go to my blog where you can ask me anything at jackfromnc.tumblr.com/ask, where we also still study the gravity of boobies. You can reach this podcast, me, Jeff, Jeebus, tons of articles like Higher Standards, Cellbond Cast, I think it's Cast from Exile, just tons of great content we have going up here recently on mtgbrodeals.com. And so you can also reach us on MTGcast, and big thank you to Professor Elemental, as always, for giving us permission to use the intro and some occasional outro music. So, until next time, listeners, tune in next week, where we find yet another person that is a notorious figure that you may or may not have heard of, but will tolerate for a duration of an hour to 2 hours at a time, only on Not Another Magic Podcast. Good night, everybody.